5. The parak opens up. David, like we said, as we mentioned, David goes out actively and attacks the plishtim. He doesn't wait to see if they're going to attack the Jewish people. He goes out and he takes Mesa Ga'ama, which is the city of Gas. It says Gas upon Excel. Gas and all the suburbs around the city of Gas. And the Malbim explains that there's a medrash to say why it's called Mesa Ga'ama. Oh, the Mari Cross says that it's referring to just like a person reaches over to turn on the light. So to David, that's how he kind of like reached over beyond his level of jurisdiction to conquer Mesa Ga'ama, which is the city of Gas. Yeah, so he just, you know, he went over, you know, just like every person has like that area around him that, so to speak, belongs to him. Just like, you know, he could reach over and turn on the light. That's the general area that belongs to a person. So too, David now is going ahead and he's establishing the borders and saying, this belongs to me.
Make him wider.
Yes.
Pushing him over.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going ahead and he's marking his turf. So Pasuk Beis continues, Vayach Esmoyav Veimadadei Bechevel Hashkiv Oysam Arza. Now he goes ahead and he attacks Moyav. What beef does he have with Moyav? What did Moyav ever do to him? Who remembers?
He sent his mother and father.
Right, exactly.
And his brothers.
Right. So David, when he was running away from Saul, he trusted Melech Moyav to watch over his family, and he left his family by Melech Moyav. However, Melech Moyav was not as loyal to David as David thought he would be, and he went ahead and killed out the whole family of David, except for one brother. One brother managed to escape. He ran over to Nachash HaAmoni. Nachash HaAmoni saved the brother, and later on, David thanks him. He shows his gratitude. But now, he's taking revenge from Moyav because they killed out his family. And what he does is, he captures them, and he decides to kill out 2/3 of the people of Moyav. Why did he do it this way? Because it's derech bizayon. It's the way of humiliation, of dehumanization of the people of Moyav to show that he doesn't, you know, really care if he kills the strong, keeps the weak. They're all equal in his eyes. He just wants to, you know, kill 2/3, whoever it's going to be. It doesn't really make any difference to him. So there's 2 pshatim, how he killed them. One pshat, which is the simple pshat of the pasuk, is that he took 2 measurements of rope, and then, so 2 measurements he killed, and then the 3rd measurement he left alive. They all lie down on the floor, and then he started measuring them by the rope, by these measurements of the rope, killed 2/3, and kept 1/3 alive. However, the Ralbag explains that what he did was, sorry, the Mari Kro explains that he did a raffle. He took three pieces of paper. One he wrote Chai, the other 2 he left blank. So whoever got a blank piece of paper was killed. Anyone who got a piece of paper that said Chai, he kept him alive. So that's how he killed out. He didn't kill out the whole people of Moav, but he killed out 2/3. This is the simple pshat of the pasuk, that 2 measurements of the rope he killed, 1 measurement he kept alive. The rest of the people of Moav, whoever was spared by David, are now owing to him taxes. Every year they have to bring taxes to David as slaves. Now David does not rest over there, he goes on further. David Hadad Ezer ben Achayv Melech Tzoiva. He goes there and he kills Hadad Ezer ben Achayv, the king of Tzoiva. Belech Talashiv Yodam in Nahar Pras. Hadad Ezer was a king and he ruled over the Nahar of Pras, the river of Pras. Not only that, but he built this special architectural fixture or building of some sort on the river. And on this monument or building, he had the image of a hand to show as if he captured the river Pras with his hand. So David went ahead and he destroyed this monument. And that's why it says in the Pasuk, Belechtei lahoshiv yadai ben har pras, when he went to return his hand on the river of Pras. When the Hadadezer, the king, went to rebuild this monument with the picture of a hand on it, with the image of a hand, David then waited for him and he killed him out, he killed out him and all of his army. Let's see what he did with his army. David captured 1,700 horsemen and 20,000 foot soldiers. Vayakar David is called a rechev, and Vayasar Mimenu mea rechev. So now, there's a rule that you cannot just go ahead and kill horses or kill any animal for no good reason. They're an enemy, right? If you kill humans, they're the enemy. So you're trying to defeat the enemy. That's one thing. But to kill animals for no good reason, that's called derech hashchasa. You're just destructive. You're just showing destruction for no good reason. So he wasn't allowed to go ahead and kill out all the horses. What he did was, is vayaker David is kol harechev. He took out their hooves. That way they wouldn't be able to, no one would be able to use these horses anymore to attack the Jewish people. So he basically eliminated this threat by taking off the hooves of the horses.
Isn't this Saba L'chaim?
No, people are not able to ride on them. But seeing natural,
I think it's the hooves that say they cut one of the muscles on the back of the leg or something.
When they take off the hooves, they cut off a muscle?
You can't take a hoof off
what
a
is
horse.
Tendon, you mean?
Huh? It's a tendon or something that they cut.
The English word he's got here is hode.
Hode?
H-O-U-G-H-E-E-D.
Interesting.
And David hoed all the chariot horses.
It's hamstrung. Hamstrung.
Huh? What did he say there in English? I don't know. Hoed,
I never
heard
it. I think
me neither.
It doesn't say here, but I presume it's they cut off on.
That's the
if you cut off the hoof, you took the hoof off a horse there, it'd be crippled.
We did that. One person said.
Yeah, but I think they cut something in the back of the leg.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't.
I could be wrong. I mean, but
you couldn't ride them fast, or whatever. Can't chase people with them.
Right. I don't think
the animal's going to limp. Whatever happens, the horse is going to limp.
Well, horses naturally they don't have hooves.
Yeah.
Don't they put on the hooves on the horses so they can ride them?
Sure, they put on shoes.
Right.
That's because it's attraction. It's not.
And it has a hoof.
It has a hoof, and they trim the hoof.
Not all horses run around with shoes. I mean, I'm talking about race horses. Some of them race without shoes.
Oh, really?
That's...
No. That's we're going to look up this word in English.
I mean, he did something so that they wouldn't be able to use them.
You got an English
dictionary?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Right. Yeah, whatever it was.
All right, let's go forward and we'll...
Okay.
So he disabled them.
He disabled them, basically. He didn't want to kill them because you're not allowed to kill horses for no reason, so he disabled them. But then he left. He left 100 chariots, meaning each chariot needs four horses to pull it. So he left 400 horses for himself. Because there's a mitzvah of lo yarei lesusim. A king is not allowed to have too many horses. Because Chazal are concerned that if Bnei Israel just are allowed to have as many horses as they want, then they're going to constantly go down to Egypt, Mitzrayim, which is apparently the place where you get horses from. And Arab horse is supposed to be, I guess, from Egypt. And therefore, Chazal said there's got to be a limit of how many horses the king can have. Because we don't want Bnei Israel constantly going on to Mitzrayim, to Egypt. So that's why David was not allowed to have more than 400 horses for himself. So that's all he kept, and the rest of them he disabled. But Tovei armed the Mesek Lazar Ladadezer Melech Toiva. So now, one of the allies of Ladadezer comes to his service and tries to help him. V'yach David Baram Esrim Shnaim Elef. He kills out 22,000 men. Elefish, yeah. He kills out 22,000 men. So he completely annihilates the enemy. Both the enemy and their allies. David appointed officials in Aram Damesek. There's a few Aram. There's Aram Tzeva, Aram Damesek, Aram Naraim, and I think that's it. Yeah. So this one is referring to Aram Damesek. And he, which is in Damesek in Syria, Syria of nowadays. Aram is now... are now slaves to David. They now have to pay taxes to him. But Yosha Hashem is David b'chol asher halach. Everything David does, he is successful. Ve'ikach David es shiltei hazav asher hayu el avdei ha'dezer ve'evi'im Yerushalayim. David now captures these golden golden signs which belong to Hadadezer, and he brings him to Yerushalayim. We're going to see in a few minutes what he does with everything that he captures. Betach u'Beiroisi arei Hadadezer, from these cities called Betach and Beiroisi, the Malbim points out that these used to be called, in Divrei Hayamim, they're referred to as Tabachas u'Machoin. And he says that the name changed over history. Though the time of David, they were called, the cities of Hadadezer were called Betach and Beiroisi. But later on, the name changed to Tabachas and Machoin. So what does he do? He goes into these cities. Lokach HaMelech David Nechoyches Har B'moid, and he gathers as much copper as he can. What did he do with the copper? So Chazal say that he used this for the Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash. He said, listen, if I cannot build the Beis HaMikdash myself, at least what I can do is I can gather treasures to use to build, in order to build the kelim that will be used in the Beis HaMikdash. So all the kelim that were made out of copper and the nechoshes, out of nechoshes in the Beis HaMikdash, were made out of this copper that David now collected from the cities of Hadadezer. And not only that, but he built the amudim, the pillars that were used in the Beis HaMikdash that were made out of copper. Were used again out of this copper that David gathered, and also the yam, which is, I think it's referring to the we're going to see in Malachim how exactly the Beis HaMikdash was built, but apparently the wall had this kind of wavy, it was like a wavy form to it, so it looked like an ocean. And that was also made out of copper, and again, this was made from everything that David now gathered as the spoils of war. Veishma Toi Melech Hamas, Yiko David is called Chel Hadadezer. Toi, here's the king of Hamas comes over, he realizes that David is victorious, and he defeated the very powerful army of Hadadezer. So what does he do? Veishlach Toi is Yoram Benoi El HaMelech David, he sends his son, Yoram, to David Lishol El Shalom El Varchoi, so he sends his son Yoram to give David a bracha to as a sign of peace. He brings forth these kelim made out of kesef, zav, and choshes. And David again used that also for the Beis HaMikdash. Gam Beis HaMikdash HaMelech David LaHashem, he uses that again for the Beis HaMikdash. Im HaKesef HaZav Asher Higdish Mikol HaGoyim Asher Kibesh. Everything he used, he elevated and used for the Beis HaMikdash. There's many Mepharshim we talk about why this is what he used. Like, you couldn't find a better source. You go, you know, and you take these kelim belong to Goyim. Who knows what they did with it? Probably all these, you know, horrible Averis that they did. They were drinking treif food and treif drinks and who knows what else. So the Mefarshim talk about how it's possible to go in and elevate. That's really what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be a light to the nations. What that means is we're supposed to elevate the Gashmias. We're supposed to elevate all the physicality. And we go to the darkest places, to the places with most tumah, with the most impurity, and we use that in particular, and we elevate that as used for the Beis HaMikdash. That's what David was doing over here. That's why it was so important for him to go ahead and capture all these nations and all these cities, because he was trying to elevate all the all the physicality, all the materialistic items that were taken down.
I want to know.
Yes.
Did he lose any men? Does it say any place?
That's a good question. He doesn't say that here.
It says he would, and he defeated all these people, and he killed all. Did the Jews lose any men at that time?
Usually, it says any time they lost men. Since over here it does not say that, then I'm assuming that he didn't.
Well,
which is again a bit hard to understand.
A war of mitzvah.
Yeah, this is Melchemes Mitzvah. Sure.
So if it's a Chol Mitzvah and these people, they hadn't done any sins, they wouldn't.
Right.
They would be turned.
Yeah, they would be protected.
Yeah, that's what they. Well, when he had all his army and everything else, didn't he have to question them beforehand?
Yeah, for sure. They were all very righteous
afraid,
men.
Don't come.
Right. You know. 100%. Yeah, you had to make sure that his army was 100% righteous, and there were enough people to stay behind and daven for them and learn. Right? There's for every 10,000 that went out to war, there were another 10,000 who stayed back to daven and to learn to make sure they were victorious. So yeah, since it doesn't say that anybody died, it's I think it's pretty safe to assume that they were protected. Yeah.
Well, you can see how by while all these kings would realize that he fought with all these people, he defeated them, and he didn't lose anybody. So
right, that's so why.
That's why they became friends.
Right, exactly. That's what Toy realized. Oh, I better become friends with David, because this man is
he's not a because he's a good general.
Right.
Because Hashem's with him.
Yeah. That's what they realized. That's why he made peace with them. And sent them all these kelim.
They became servants and everything else.
Yeah. So where did David take the spoils of war from? Me'aram, u'mimayav, u'mibnei amoin, u'miplishtim, u'me'amalek. These are all the places that he took these kelim from. U'mishlal Hadadezer ben Choy melech tzeva. And again, from Hadadezer, this king who fought him, was ruling over the river Pras. All the spoils of war he used for the Beis HaMikdash. V'yas David shame b'shuvim akoyses aram b'gei melech shmeina asar elef. David makes a name for himself when he comes back from fighting Aram and Gei Melech. 18,000 men. What does that mean? So the commentators explain that this name is referring to the fact that David went ahead and he buried all the soldiers that died at war who fought against them, and that was something that was never done before. It was in the whole history of warfare among in the world, there was never a king who buried his enemy. Again, because that burying is showing respect to the bodies, and no king wants to show respect to his enemy. It's a sign of weakness. But David, for the first time in history, it was unprecedented that any king did that before. But David went ahead and made for himself a name. Everyone knew now that David goes ahead and he shows respect to his enemies by burying the dead in the battlefield. And Chazal say the same thing will happen in at the end of days in Melchemes Gog u'Magog, when it says in Yechezkel, "V'samti makom kever leGog be'Eretz Yisrael." Right, Gog will have a place to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He will again fight the Jews, and he will be defeated, but the Jews will show respect to him, and they will bury him in Eretz Yisrael. That's going to be a great tzchus for Goig. And referring back to Noach, because Yefes, the forefather of Goig, went ahead and covered Noach. It says that in that merit, his great-great-grandson's Gog, when he fights the Jewish people, he will get to be buried.
So how long does this take? From the time that David became unofficially the king
until now?
He's still unofficial, right?
No, he's still, you know, now he's officially the king. In the beginning, he was unofficially the king. When he was in Hebron, that's when he was unofficial.
Okay.
Because there were these two kings. He was a king in Hebron. Yeah. Then they had the son of Shlomo, Ish-bosheth, who was a king amongst all the other tribes.
All right, but then from the time he was officially the king, now he goes out and he having all these wars.
Right.
Until now, how long did it take?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Reigned on it was another 40 years.
Right. Well, he was king in Hebron for 7 years.
Yeah.
And then he was king in Yerushalayim for 33 years. But it's not clear exactly how long each war took. It doesn't say that. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, did 33 years he was king, okay? But while when did the wars end? That he was king finally,
well,
he doesn't have to fight.
Through his whole kingship.
Yeah,
he wasn't left alone for 33 years.
Right, I'm not saying that, you know, he was fighting every day for those 33 years.
That's what I mean. When did the fighting start?
But it kept on going on and on. It wasn't like, it was, you know, kind of like the fighting that we have in Israel with, you know, with all the terrorist organizations. You know, it's not like we're fighting every day. But every year or two, there's another war, right? Once it's a war with Hezbollah, once it's a war with Hamas. It's always something else. It's always, our enemies are always trying to kill us. Until we completely wipe them out. David, at the end of his days, when he finally defeated all his enemies, that's when there was quiet. That's why when his son, Shlomo, was king, he was able to build the Beis HaMikdash, because that was the time of peace.
At that point, so how old was David when finally he didn't have to fight these people anymore?
39 years old. That's Jag Betty. What difference does it make?
No,
we're going to see. We're going to see later on.
But
the fighting was constant. It was going on for a long time. Pretty much through his whole kingship. Yeah. We're going to see at the end when it stops. We're going to see. We'll get there.
Doesn't stop.
Saying,
he has his kids.
Yeah. That's, well, I don't know if you can call that a war. It's really kind of like
an inside
job.
It had to come to a stop when his son built the base. Otherwise, he couldn't have built the base either.
Right.
So it had to come to a stop.
Yeah. Vayasim be'edayim mitzivim chol edayim. Yeah, Pasuk Yudalad. Vayasim be'edayim mitzivim chol edayim sam mitzivim v'yi chol edayim avadim l'David. He appoints officials in Edayim, and they now become slaves to David. V'yisha Hashem es David b'chol shehar lach. Everything David does, he is successful. V'yimlech David al kol Yisrael. He is now ruling over the whole of Israel. Again, before now, he did not have Yerushalayim. He didn't have the Yebusi. But now, when he finally defeated all his enemies, he widened the borders of Israel. And now, he finally was a king over the whole of Israel. It says that now that the wars were temporarily over, he now went ahead and did the second task of a king. First task of a king is to fight the wars, to have someone that would lead them in war. And now that he finished that task, at least for now, he goes on to complete the second task, which is to judge the Jewish people. It says, "Oisim mishpat u'tzedaka l'chol amai." Chazal asks, how could he do mishpat and tzedakah? It seems to be a stira. One is contradicting the other. If you do mishpat, you can't do tzedakah. If you do tzedakah, you can't do mishpat. So there's one explanation that's given, that when a case would come to him, he would go ahead and judge the case, and when the person who came out chayav, who was he came out chayav in the case, David would go ahead and pay the money out of his own pocket. So that person would not have to pay it. But then the Gemara asks, if he went out and did that, So what's the point? You're just going to encourage all the people to steal. But they say, yeah, we can steal, we can borrow,
we
and never return the money.
We don't lose.
Yeah, we'll go to court, and if we lose, and David will pay the debt. We have nothing to worry about. So he doesn't like that pshat. So we say a different pshat, that what he did was he judged the case, and anyone who came on chayav, David would go ahead and it says v'ayseh tzedakah lenafshay, meaning he would go ahead and daven
and pray for him,
so he would turn to the right way. He wouldn't actually pay his debt because then you're encouraging bad behavior, but he would go ahead and pray for him to make sure that he would be doing the right thing from that one.
Well, straight and narrow from then on.
Yeah.
Don't be a thief anymore.
Right. David would make sure that all the people were good people. And
that's it. Now, at this point, how many years already was he king when he came to this point?
That's a good question.
What year of his kingdom did this happen? That's what I could. It seems now the wars were ended.
Well, for now, temporarily.
Now, all right, but now he's, okay, we have a kid.
How many years was it? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, I guess he really didn't have any shalom altogether.
Yeah, he really did not have
peace.
Even
when he got older, there was a fight of who's going to be king and
right, exactly.
Who's this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And
he had his sons rebelling. He had other people rebelling. He had a rough life, David HaMelech. Did not have peace for 1 second. Yoav ben Tzruya al Tzava, he appointed Yoav ben Tzruya. Again, we saw Yoav before. Yoav was the general of David before this. And now he's now the general of the whole army. Yoshavat ben Achilud Maskir. He was now the Secretary of State. Yoshavat ben Achilud. Ratzalik ben Achitu v'Achimelech ben Avyasar Koyhanim. Tzadok and Achimelech are the Koyhanim, his personal Koyhanim. Mishroya Soifer, he was the scribe. Uvnoyoy ben Yehoyada v'Akresi v'Aplesi uvnei David Koyhanim Hayu. Uvnoyoy ben Yehoyada and the crazy and the placey were Koyhani.
At this point, they were still using the Mishkan, right?
Yes.
For what they had to use for.
Yeah. They didn't have the Beis HaMikdash yet. So these...
They still carried it around like they did in the desert.
Right.
And every time they needed... Well, in the desert, Moshe used to take it apart and then put it together.
Right.
Was it the same way here, or was it put?
No, it was put in.
It just kept going. They didn't have to take it apart every day.
Yeah, no, they put it in one spot. Once they finally.
Okay.
No, there was no moving around because they're not in the desert. They don't have to travel anymore. So once they captured Yerushalayim, they brought the Aron. We saw how they tried to do that in previous Prakim. It wasn't so successful initially. But they brought the Aron to Yerushalayim, to Har Maria, and that's where they placed it. They placed it where the Beis HaMikdash will eventually be built, but for now, they had the Mishkan over there.
Oh, I thought the Mishkan was destroyed by the Pelishtim before.
Yeah, but then they brought the Aron, all the Kalim. They brought it to
Har Maria. He said he put it in the tent, but it didn't say in the Mishkan.
Right. I'm saying, I don't know if they called it the Mishkan, but that was the place where worship was, yeah. So I just want to spend a few minutes, since we have some time, to speak about Michal Bashol. As we recall, Michal Bashol was very upset with David when he went out and danced in public in what seemed to her as a very degrading way for a king to dance in front of Aron Hashem. So just a few points that I wanted to make is that, first of all, we see over the concept of Zokain Ve'inu Lefichvaydai. The Gemara talks about this term called Zokin Ve'inu Lefichvaydai, meaning someone who's older, and it's not proper for him to go ahead and humiliate himself and to lower his stature in such a way. So the Gemara uses that and refers to a case of a Shavas Aveda. When a person has the ability to return a lost object, the Gemara says if it's Zokin Ve'inu Lefichvaydai, if he's an older and respectable man, and it's not to his honor to go ahead and try to go ahead and return this lost object, then he doesn't have to. Usually a person is obligated to go ahead and return any lost object that he sees. If he tries to make believe he didn't see it, Hashem says, I know exactly what you're thinking in your head. Don't try to make believe you didn't see it. I know that you saw it. You are obligated to do your best you can in order to return it. However, if it's not to his dignity, it's below his stature, he doesn't have to go ahead and return it.
It'd be like if whatever it is in a puddle of thing in it, you have to bend down, get dirty, you have to pick it up.
So right.
To a person with a dignity,
it's degrading. Exactly.
It's degrading, right.
So now there's a machlokes among the Rishonim, if what that means is that it's actually usur for him, he's not allowed to go ahead and return that lost object because he has to protect his honor, respect himself, or do we say that he doesn't have to, but if he wants to, he has the ability, he has the opportunity to go ahead and return it. So it seems to be a machlokes between the Rambam and the Rosh. The Rambam holds that he, in fact, is allowed to go ahead and return the lost object, even though it's below his stature. However, the Rosh holds that it's actually also for him. He's not allowed to go ahead and return the lost object because it's below his honor.
I got a hell of a question on that. All right, he's not allowed to do it himself, but can he tell somebody else?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, he can go ahead and tell somebody else to do it, but if he's the only one around, then he's...
That's okay now. All right. But say right now there's nobody around. Good. Now he walks down the street and he sees another fellow. He says, hey, you know, there's somebody left.
You can go ahead and do that.
Should he tell the other guy to go and do
it? Yeah, sure. He's not degrading himself in any way.
But does he have to do it?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. If he has the ability to do it without humiliating himself, then for sure he does. He does have to.
All right.
100%. So, so the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is like the Rambam, that you are allowed, that he is allowed to, if he wants to. And the Rambam Paskin is like the Rosh, that he's actually not allowed to go ahead and degrade himself.
Well, it depends who the person is. Not everybody's the same. Some people would be degraded by something that me and you wouldn't be degraded by.
Right, exactly. It depends according to the stature of the person. Everyone has to be, you know, judge of himself to see if it's below his dignity or not. So now, David, that was really the difference between David's approach and Michal's approach. David held, I'm saying, we see there are Gemaras to talk about old and respectable men who go ahead and do things that seem to be degrading in order to prepare for Shabbos. And the Gemara says that you're allowed to do that. What's the difference? Why is that different than going out and returning a lost object? So the Mefarshim explain that there's a difference between if a mitzvah of ben adam l'chaveiroi and a mitzvah of ben adam l'makom. If it's ben adam l'chaveiroi, it's not clear, it's not obvious from the mitzvah that you're doing it for the mitzvah. You might think that you're doing it for, you know, to do a favor to your friend, because you want him to like you, or whatever. You have ulterior motives. However, when it's a mitzvah that's only ben adam l'makom, it's a mitzvah between you and Hashem, there's no ulterior motives over here. So it's very clear, it's very obvious that you're doing it for the covet of Hashem, to honor Hashem. And then, in that case, you are obligated to go ahead and what might seem to be something that's degrading, like washing the floors, doing a sponge on Erev Shabbos in order for the honor of Shabbos. That's allowed to, because even if you're a respectable man, it's very clear that you're doing it for the covet of Shabbos, you're doing it for Hashem, and that's allowed. And that's why David went ahead and he danced over here in front of the Aron, because it was very clear that he's doing it for Hashem. He's doing it for the honor of the Aron, of the Luchas HaBris that are inside the Aron. He's doing it for the respect of Hashem. And that's why he was allowed to go ahead and publicly, what might seem to be very degrading for a king, to dance like a simpleton. But that his approach was that because it's clear that I'm doing it for Hashem, It's not below my dignity. I'm allowed to go in and do that. However, Michal, she felt that her the approach from which she grew up on in her father's home, in the house of Shaul, was that you know you have to be humble, you have to you know stay inside, not go in and publicly do you know do these kind of actions. And that's why she was upset with David. However, part of her punishment was, as it says over there, that Michal went ahead and she rebuked him in public. In public, she told him off. How can you go ahead and degrade yourself, dance in front of the Aron in such a way, like a peasant, like a simpleton? And then when David replies to her, it says Vayomer David El Michal. Why does it say Vayomer David El Michal? Just say Vayomer David. David answers her. Why does it seems like it's a new stage in the conversation? So the Mefarshim explained that what David did is he actually went inside. He didn't answer her in public. He went inside in the palace, and over there he answered her and he told her, "No, I'm doing this for the honor of Hashem. Because I'm doing this for the honor of Hashem, I'm allowed to do this." So that's part of the reason why Michal was punished. Her approach was, you know, to be humble, to you know, to stay inside.
Insulted him, basically.
Right, and she went and insulted him in public. And David
didn't want to do that.
Right, David he did the exact opposite. He answered her inside. He didn't want to have this argument in public because you know, he didn't want to.
You don't want to fight with your wife.
Yeah, you don't want to fight with your wife in public, especially if you're a king. It's not such a good idea. Okay, we'll stop here.